Have you ever tried to learn a new skill, repeated all the right steps perfectly, put in the hours, and still completely failed to master it?
Oh, yeah, it's incredibly frustrating.
Right, you just hit a wall. But what if the problem wasn't a lack of talent or, a lack of discipline?
Which is what everyone usually assumes.
Exactly. What if the real issue was the psychological wrapping, like the invisible layers hiding your true potential?
That is a really fascinating way to look at it.
It totally changes things.
Yeah.
And that is the radical premise we're unpacking today, drawn straight from chapter 3 of a book called Non-Compromise Pendulum by Oleg Maltsev and Tom Patti.
Yes, great source material.
Right. And the authors, they basically decode the psychological blueprint of the legendary boxing coach, Customato. It fundamentally changes how we view teaching, learning, and honestly, just human nature.
It really does.
So, okay, let's unpack this. Because to understand this system, we basically have to throw away everything we know about how the brain absorbs information.
We really do. And to set the stage for this, think about the standard educational model.
Okay.
We usually treat a student, whether they're, in a gym, a classroom, or even a boardroom, as a sponge.
Right, just soaking things up.
Exactly. We assume they're a blank slate ready to absorb whatever we pour into them. But Customato, he was essentially reverse engineering the human mind to build perfect gladiators.
Right.
And he operated on a totally different wavelength. His foundational view was that a human being is not a sponge. A human being is a cabbage.
A cabbage. I mean, I love that image, but it's pretty unusual.
It is, but before you can teach them a single physical skill, before you can mold them into anything, you have to systematically strip away their outer leaves.
That immediately implies resistance.
Yeah.
It implies that there are tightly wound barriers blocking the core, and that those barriers are just an inherent part of the structure.
That's exactly it.
To get to the truth of a person, we first have to understand these outermost layers. And according to the source material, there are four specific leaves we have to peel back.
Right, four leaves.
The very first, outermost leaf is what D'Amato called the role-based structure.
Exactly. This is essentially the identity or the role a person is currently occupying in their own mind.
Like how they see themselves.
Yes. And the text makes a brilliant mechanical point here. If the internal role is wrong, the physical skill simply won't stick.
Oh, interesting.
Think about it from the perspective of a trainer trying to teach a motor chain, like a specific combination of punches or the footwork required to pivot away from a blow.
Right, the physical mechanics.
Yeah, that physical action has to literally clip on to the student's psyche. But if their internal role is victim or bystander or, I don't know, accountant.
The physical puzzle pieces of Gladiator's skill set will just bounce right off them.
Exactly. To the outside observer, the person looks completely uneducable.
It's like trying to install high-performance 3D rendering software on an operating system built for a basic desktop calculator.
That's a great analogy.
Right. The software code is perfectly fine. The trainer is doing a great job. But the underlying system architecture just rejects it. It crashes.
Totally crashes.
So you have to align the role first. If you want to install fighter software, you need a fighter operating system.
Right.
But let's say I do that. Let's say I perfectly align my role and I'm totally bought in. I'm still not ready to just learn the skills, am I?
Not quite.
Because even the best operating systems overheat if there's too much background processing.
That is the perfect way to transition into the second leaf, which the text calls the character area of focus.
Okay, the character area.
Yeah, humans generate incredible amounts of psychological stress, especially when operating in high-stakes environments. And because of that stress, people need pressure relief valves.
That makes sense. We all need to blow off steam.
Exactly. But under pressure, people subconsciously adopt these alternate characters that lead them astray from their actual tasks.
Wait, really?
Yeah, these characters act as channels for venting steam, taking the person's focus and shifting it to an entirely different plane of reality.
Okay, the sources provide two incredible contrasting examples here involving two of D'Amato's most famous fighters, right? Mike Tyson and Floyd Patterson.
Right. So when Mike Tyson wasn't actively engaged in the intense singular focus of preparing for a fight in the ring, his pressure relief character would take over.
And what was that?
He would suddenly shift his attention to a criminal plane. The text notes he would adopt this street criminal persona to vent his psychological steam, which, you know, inevitably led to massive problems with the authorities.
Wow, so he was bleeding off the intense pressure of being a gladiator by acting out in the street.
Exactly. Now, Floyd Patterson went the complete opposite direction.
Oh.
When he stopped preparing for a fight, his pressure relief character was a philosophizing family man.
That sounds pretty harmless.
Right. He would start contemplating the temporality of life. He'd become this highly empathetic, gentle, law-abiding soul.
Okay, I have to jump in and push back on this a little bit.
Sure.
I need to understand the physical mechanism here. I get that Tyson acting out and getting arrested is an obvious roadblock, right?
Oh, clearly.
How does Patterson, thinking about the temporality of life while mowing his lawn on a Sunday, actively ruin a left hook thrown under the arena lights on a Saturday night?
That's the real question.
I just don't see the direct mechanical link there. Why is being a thoughtful guy seen as such a massive roadblock to skill development?
Because in D'Amato's world of absolute uncompromising performance, any leakage of energy is a fatal vulnerability.
Any leakage at all.
Yeah. These characters change the vector of your attention. If your steam is venting outward in multiple different directions, you have no concentrated forward pressure to drive the engine.
Oh, I see.
To throw that perfect left hook on a Saturday night requires a singular, ruthless intent. Patterson's philosophizing wasn't just a harmless weekend hobby.
It was draining him.
Exactly. It was actively bleeding away the absolute ruthlessness required to be the undisputed heavyweight champion. D'Amato realized that Patterson's philosophical character meant his focus was fractured.
So he wasn't fully present.
Right. It creates a micro-hesitation. In the fraction of a second where he needs to destroy the opponent, that philosophical character whispers, "Is this right?" And the motor chain breaks down.
Wow. Think about what that means for you, the listener, in your own life. When you're stressed about a major presentation or a massive career shift, do you suddenly start hyper-focusing on organizing your garage?
Or diving deeply into a random video game.
Exactly. That's your pressure relief character venting the steam you actually need to power through your main objective. It's misdirected energy.
Totally misdirected.
Okay, so we've peeled back the role-based structure and we've stripped away the character area of focus. But we're still not at the core. Now we hit the mind's automated internal security systems.
Yes, we are now getting deep into the cabbage, hitting the inner leaves. Leaf number three is the psyche defense mechanisms.
Okay, so how is this different from the first two?
Well, if the previous leaf was about distractions, this leaf is about active self-sabotage. These are your internal filters, working both inside out and outside in.
What kind of filters?
They're deep-seated moral or societal rules you've adopted, often entirely unconsciously, that restrain your impulses.
Okay.
The source material uses a very stark primal example, an internal filter that says, "I must not kill my brothers."
Which, for the record, is a fantastic rule for a functioning society.
Oh, absolutely. But in the context of the boxing ring, where your literal physical objective is to dismantle the human being standing across from you, that defense mechanism becomes a massive liability.
Because it's trying to stop you from doing the very thing you're there to do.
Precisely. The text explains how people unconsciously create false obstacles for themselves to avoid violating these deep internal filters.
It sounds exactly like a modern car's collision avoidance system.
Oh, that's a perfect way to put it.
Yeah, like you, the driver, the conscious mind, might be slamming your foot on the gas pedal because you want to win the race.
Hmm.
But the car's internal computer, the defense mechanism, says obstacle detected, impact imminent, hitting another human is bad.
Right. And it overrides you.
It automatically overrides you and slams on the brakes. The engine wants to go, but the safety system refuses to let it happen.
That is a brilliant analogy, and it perfectly describes the mechanical failure happening in the fighter's mind. They self-sabotage so they don't have to break their own rules.
Wow.
And if that collision avoidance system, the defense mechanism, somehow fails or gets bypassed, you immediately slam into the fourth leaf.
Which is?
The consciousness safety locks.
Right. So if the defense mechanisms are the philosophical filters, the safety locks are the visceral automated alarms.
Precisely. We're talking about raw fear, physical pain, overwhelming emotions, and acute anxiety.
The really primal stuff.
Yeah. If a dangerous situation bypasses your philosophical filters, these safety locks trip instantly. And if the emotional safety lock fails to stop you, a purely physical reaction kicks in.
Which the text specifically calls the reaction to distance, right?
Exactly. Your body instinctively pulls away from the danger zone. You retreat. You flinch. You build a wall of distance between yourself and the threat.
This mechanism perfectly explains a phenomenon the sources mention. which sports journalists at the time called Freud Patterson.
Yes, Freud Patterson.
Floyd Patterson had these deeply ingrained philosophical filters and emotional safety locks constantly tripping inside his mind. The text notes that right in the middle of a fight, Patterson would suddenly start feeling intense empathy for his opponent.
In the middle of a professional boxing match.
Right. He would be physically dominating the match, objectively in a position to deliver the knockout blow, and his internal safety lock would scream, "This is wrong. I feel bad for him."
And then he'd hold back.
He would subconsciously alter his fighting style to lose a fight he could easily win.
That is the ultimate example of a consciousness safety lock in action. The reaction of the safety lock is a direct consequence of his underlying philosophy.
It's crazy.
He literally thought his way out of victory. His mind hit the brakes while his body was trying to press the gas.
Again, you got to relate this to your own life. How many times have you created an imaginary obstacle or suddenly felt bad about outshining a colleague just because your own internal safety locks were tripped?
It happens all the time in the corporate world.
It really does. Maybe you quietly pulled your name from consideration for a promotion, not because you weren't capable, but because some deep internal filter said, "It's not safe to win here. People won't like me."
Yeah.
It is chilling how perfectly this extreme gladiator psychology maps onto everyday self-sabotage.
It's a universal human architecture. But this brings us to the most crucial and perhaps the most controversial part of DeMotta's entire model.
Oh, we're finally there.
Yes. Once you manage to strip away the role, bypass the character distractions, dismantle the defense mechanisms, and disarm the safety locks,
you finally reach the absolute center of the cabbage.
Exactly.
The text calls this center the Recensorship Group Core, or the RGC.
Yeah.
And I want to pause here because that is some heavy, dense terminology.
It really is a mouthful.
Can you break down what those words actually mean in this context?
It is dense, but it's incredibly precise. Think of recensorship as the mind's ability to completely rewrite or override the conscious narrative.
Okay, override the narrative.
Right. Yeah. It censors out all the societal rules, the logic, and the learned behaviors, reverting to an unfiltered primal script.
Wow.
And the group core refers to the clustered central memory mechanism that holds those absolute primal instincts. This is the true, unalterable nature of a person. It's the engine of pure instinct.
And here is where Castimato separated himself from every other trainer in history. His grand realization was that you cannot create a core.
No, you can't.
You cannot train it into someone with enough heavy bag work. You can only discover it.
That is the pivotal insight. If your ultimate goal is to create an invincible world champion gladiator, you have to peel back all those leaves to find a core that specifically inherently contains the killer instinct.
Right.
You can't put it there. You just have to hope it's there when you finish peeling.
And I want to make sure we emphasize that finding the core isn't just about boxing or violence.
No, definitely not.
The text makes it clear that this model applies to everything. If you want to mold a master engineer or a brilliant surgeon or a CEO, you need to strip their cabbage to find a completely different core.
Exactly. The core has to match the goal.
The raw internal material has to match the external goal.
Mm-hmm.
But since Cus was hunting for the ultimate gladiator, he was specifically hunting for that killer instinct.
He was. And the source material recounts a profound, almost chilling realization Cus had when evaluating a young Mike Tyson.
What was it?
He looked at Tyson's history. The fact that Tyson had been sent to a juvenile detention center because he stabbed someone on the street without a second thought about the legal or social consequences.
Which is pretty intense.
To normal society, that is a tragedy. But to Cus D'Amato, operating as a psychological diagnostician, it was proof.
Proof of the core.
It proved that Tyson's core wasn't just aggressive. It was pure, unadulterated killer instinct.
The text mentions that when Tyson was just 13 years old, they couldn't even find sparring partners for him.
Yeah, grown men were terrified.
Even for $1,000, grown professional men wouldn't get in the ring with a 13-year-old kid. Why? Because while everyone else was sparring for points, treating it like a sport governed by rules, Tyson's unmasked core was operating purely on the instinct of the RGC.
He was a different breed.
He was looking only for the knockout. He didn't care about the rules of engagement.
That is the raw, terrifying power of the core when it operates uninhibited.
Yeah.
And to truly prove D'Amato's theory, to prove that the unchangeable core matters more than anything else, the text offers a brilliant comparative analysis between Mike Tyson and Floyd Patterson.
Oh, this part is fascinating.
It asks the ultimate question. What happens when you have a perfect physical specimen, but they lack the proper core?
Let's look at Patterson's core first. Physically, he was the absolute prototype. Tall, long arms, incredible punching power.
The ideal build.
He was exactly what you'd draw up in a lab if you were designing a heavyweight champion. But his RGC, his true core, was what the text describes as a businessman core.
A businessman.
Yeah, he was inherently law-abiding, empathetic, and socially well-adjusted. Now, Duato's system was so incredibly effective that he managed to take Patterson to the world championship anyway.
Which is a testament to the system.
Totally. But because Patterson's core didn't naturally generate that primal killer instinct, he couldn't hold on to the title. He lacked that unending, roaring internal blaze required to effortlessly destroy an opponent.
He just didn't have it in him.
And tellingly, once he retired, he went on to become a highly successful businessman. He naturally reverted to his true core.
Now, contrast that entirely with Tyson. Physically, Mike Tyson was incredibly imperfect for a heavyweight fighter. Yeah, he was too short and he had a severe reach disadvantage. Mechanically, he was giving up physical leverage to almost everyone he fought.
Wow, I never realized that.
But he possessed the exact gladiator core Cus was hunting for. And D'Amato knew immediately that Tyson's core would overpower his physical disadvantages.
How does instinct overpower the physics of a longer arm?
By bypassing the safety locks we talked about earlier, remember the reaction to distance.
Right, pulling away from danger.
When a taller fighter throws a punch, a normal brain triggers the safety lock and the body flinches or retreats. Tyson's core didn't trigger that lock.
Oh, wow.
His instinct allowed him to step into the danger zone without a microsecond of hesitation. His pure, uninhibited forward pressure effectively neutralized the opponent's longer reach.
That's incredible.
The instinct generated by that core was so overwhelming, it literally rewrote the physical limitations of his body.
But this brings up a massive red flag for me.
What's that?
If the RGC is this pure, unfiltered engine of instinct, this roaring fire that overrides fear and societal rules, what happens when you successfully strip away all the cabbage leaves and leave that killer instinct completely exposed?
Right.
Isn't that profoundly dangerous?
This raises the most important question of the entire chapter, and it's the exact dilemma D'Amato faced.
I can imagine.
The text is very explicit about this reality. If you rip off all the defense mechanisms and all the societal safety locks from a core like Mike Tyson's,
You don't get a boxing champion.
you get a maniac. You get someone who cannot function in civil
Right.
society.
You get someone who stabs people on the street and spends their life in prison, not the Hall of Fame.
Exactly. The raw impulse of that specific core is pure destruction. So the challenge becomes, how do you channel the fire of a jet engine without burning down the entire fuselage?
That's a great question.
The solution is the most delicate and brilliant part of D'Amato's psychological engineering. He had to tear down the existing cabbage leaves to diagnose and find the core, yes, but he couldn't leave it naked.
He had to protect it somehow.
He had to selectively leave a few leaves intact or literally artificially rebuild new protective layers.
You had to rewrap the cabbage.
Precisely. He had to build new echelons of defense. He had to put enough psychological layers back onto Tyson so that he could control himself outside the ring, so he wouldn't act on an impulsive, violent urge at a restaurant and ruin his life.
But how does that work when it gets in the ring?
And this is the genius of it. He had to engineer those layers so they could be instantly bypassed the moment Tyson stepped through the ropes. It was about creating a perfectly controlled burn.
And that leads us perfectly into the final step of the model.
Yeah.
Because we've spent all this time talking about the cabbage, but the chapter itself is called The Model of Cabbage and Molding,
Right. Molding.
which is the actual training part. Yeah.
Yeah, molding is the actual physical training. It is the skill development, like the footwork, the head movement, the punching technique.
Boxing stuff.
But the absolute non-negotiable takeaway from D'Amato's system is the sequence of events. You can only begin the molding process after the core is exposed and the protective layers are perfectly adjusted.
Because if you try to mold the cabbage before peeling the leaves,
The skills just bounce off. They never reach the core.
wow.
They get caught up in the role distractions. They bleed out through the character venting. They get blocked by the safety
So
locks.
all that practice is just wasted.
A student can practice a punch for 10,000 hours, but because their psychological wrapping is subconsciously rejecting the skill, it will never become an automatic, instinctive movement.
It has to reach the RGC.
The physical skill has to be fused directly to the RGC, the core instinct. If the core doesn't align with the skill, it's wasted time.
It requires an incredibly honest and often deeply uncomfortable self-audit. D'Amato forced his fighters to look at their absolute raw nature. He stripped away all the polite fictions they told themselves about who they were.
What fascinates me most about delving into this source material is how completely at odds D'Amato's philosophy is with our modern popular theories of learning.
How so?
Today, we're obsessed with the growth mindset, the idea that anyone can be anything if they just put in the reps and believe in themselves.
Right, the 10,000-hour rule, all that.
But D'Amato's system was entirely ruthlessly binary. You were either perfectly aligned with your core nature or you were wasting your time.
Wow.
There were no gradual levels of mastery in his mind, only a profound, uncompromising understanding of one's own fundamental nature and the discipline to align every single layer of your psychology toward a singular goal.
It's a brilliant synthesis, and it's a little intimidating, honestly. It challenges the very foundation of how we approach self-improvement.
It definitely forces you to look in the mirror.
It really does. So to wrap up this deep dive into the source material, I want to leave you with one final provocative question to ponder based on everything we've unpacked today about roles, characters, and your own hidden core.
I love this part.
Think about the times you suddenly abandon a strict routine to indulge in a totally different hobby or adopt a new persona. Are you just relaxing? Or is your character area of focus actually frantically venting steam because your current career path is entirely at odds with your true central core?
That's a heavy question.
Next time you hit a wall in your training, your career, or your personal growth, before you blame your work ethic, ask yourself, are you trying to mold the cabbage without peeling the leaves? Thanks for joining the conversation today. We'll see you on the next deep dive.